if you are of a certain age and you feel like, well, I'll never meet anybody, then you need to look elsewhere. Maybe go a little younger, maybe go a little, just something you've not tried before. Even though, like, I'm single, I'm looking for somebody, but it's sometimes it's just you're not looking hard enough if you really want it. Or even if it's just companionship you're looking for, do something you thought you would never do. Because as we get older, we do get more set in our ways. And so we tend to like slough off opportunities that might be really good for us.
Hi there, and welcome to Gay Men's Life Lab, the podcast that's all about personal growth for gay men. My name is Buck Dodson, and I'm a licensed therapist and board-certified life coach who's committed to helping you thrive. Each week, we go all in on what it takes to live a full and healthy life with loving relationships, engaging work, a sense of purpose, and all the joy you deserve. And of course, we do all this with our unique perspectives and experiences as gay men. So before we get into today's episode, if you want to learn more about me and the topics I discuss on this podcast, please visit buckdodson.com. And with that, thanks for tuning in, and let's get started. So hey, everyone, welcome to another episode of Gay Men's Life Lab. I am thrilled to be here with my guest, David Pevsner, who we are going to be talking about his new book, his new memoir called Damn Shame. So David, welcome to Gay Men's Life Lab.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I'm so happy that you're here. So before we jump in and talk about this book and your life and everything, I want to introduce listeners to who you are, and many of them may already know you, but David Pevsner is the author of a very funny, moving, sometimes raunchy, and powerful, it's really a wonderful book, called Damn Shame, A Memoir of Desire, Defiance, and Show Tunes. David is a 62-year-old actor, erotic provocateur, an anti-ageist, and anti-body-shaming and pro-sexuality advocate. Over the course of his 40-year career in show business, David has done it all. He's acted on Broadway, off-Broadway, in independent films, and numerous TV network shows, including Grey's Anatomy, Modern Family, and Criminal Minds. And away from the stage and the television cameras, David has dedicated himself to exploring his deepest sexual fantasies. In his late 30s, he became a male escort, and over the last several years, has attracted a large international fan base through his blog of erotic and nude photographs celebrating his 62-year-old body. Damn Shame is David's incredible story and is a passionate and poignant look at one man's journey from a thin, shy boy ashamed of his body and sexuality to a defiant, fearless everyman exploring his erotic fantasies.
That covers it.
It sure does. Yeah, I am so excited. And, you know, it's funny, David, when Scott, your book publisher or book agent, I'm not sure, you know, what his
role is. He's my editor, and he is the best, truly the best.
I had just read, literally like 2 days before, an article with you about the book. And I don't remember what publication it was. It was like a digital publication. And I was like, oh, this is really intriguing, this guy. Like, I'm not, you know, I'll be honest, I'm not like a huge Broadway guy, although I think I may have seen you when you were in Naked Boys singing. I'm not sure when you were.
Well, I wasn't in it. I was never in Naked Boys. I wrote part of Naked Boys. Yeah.
You were in it.
So you
it.
Would
okay.
not have seen me in it. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So anyway, when I had seen that and I was really intrigued, and then I get this email from Scott saying, hey, we want to see if you can bring David on to talk about Damn Shame. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So I'm excited to have you here for so many
reasons.
Now
I know how I got here.
Exactly.
No, Scott is so supportive, and he's looking for opportunities to talk about this, not just to push the book, but also because of the subject matter and what it meant to him when he read it, and what I'm hoping it means to a lot of other people who will read it.
Mm. Yeah, and that's what I want to just jump right into, because this book is, yes, it's a memoir and it's your story, but for everybody, but especially for gay men, it has such important themes. So, you know, what inspired you to share your story so openly and candidly with the world?
Well, it started, I mean, I've been writing probably 26 years now, and I always wrote from my own personal experience, whether it was songs that I wrote. I wrote a song for a Naked Boy singing called The Naked Maid based on my experiences as being a naked maid. So I've always written out of my experiences. And I'd done a couple of one-man shows in which I used material from my life. And what I found was even though some people may not have had my experience, like for instance, I was an escort, and people may not have been an escort, but what I have found in telling the story about it is kind of a universality. Mm-hmm. That everybody has had moments where they've done something that, you know, I'm not saying I'm ashamed of it, because I'm not at all, but you know, that maybe that spoke to them in a certain way. And I would do my shows or I would do a song and people would be like, oh my God, the funniest thing happened to me the other day. And it was just like that. And when I realized in developing both the show and the book, reading passages or doing performances, I would get people who would say to me, oh my God, Thank you for putting that out there. It's something it's been in my head. I have nobody to talk to about it. I'm ashamed of talking about whatever. And I feel like it's what I want to be able to do with all of this. And the reason why I feel like I've wanted to express it is I want people to talk about this stuff. Mm-hmm. I was so tired of keeping it inside of me for as many years as I did, where I would kind of be like suffer in secret or feel like I'm like some kind of a pervert because of what I liked that nobody else was talking about. And then finally was like, you know what? Fuck them. It's never too late. If you've got something going on in your head and you keep it, I just didn't want to be like, you know, 80 years old and go, gee, I wish I had blah, 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 blah.
Right.
You know? So, and then
shared your story, not giving that gift to the world.
Well, in doing everything that I did, because I mean, I think the book is kind of epic in kind of like what it covers in terms of sexuality. It's my career, but in terms of sexuality, and I feel like I made that happen. I said yes to exploring rather than not exploring. And in exploring, I found some real resonant universal things that I hope people will respond to. And like the messages that I get about my OnlyFans page and my blogs and stuff is like, thank you for doing this. I'm an older guy or I've been ashamed of my body or whatever it is. And not just men, women too.
I'm sure.
So that's why I'm so thrilled and pleased that the book found a home courtesy of Scott and that the story is going to be out there and it's hopefully going to open up a conversation that people are it's polarizing and it makes people uncomfortable, but
good.
Well, with the conservatism that's coming our way, where people want to essentially like cut off our dicks and, you know, especially as gay men, we need to own this more. We need to own our sexuality. We need to own our desires, our fantasies, and not be afraid of them, not be ashamed of them, not let them shame us.
Right.
So it's about ownership.
So powerful and well said. And we are entering this period where our sexuality is being at once repressed again in a way that it wasn't for a period of time. And that's not just repressed by the outside world, but we kind of in our own worlds, our own networks. Sure. We are there. I think there's a lot of shadow around our sexual desires and fantasies. And yet we have platforms like OnlyFans, and we're seeing where, you know, clearly there's a strong desire and need and want
to express ourselves that way.
Exactly. Yep. Right. And to get more open about our bodies and our desires.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we've been slut shamed for years, not only to being gay men and then during AIDS. And that has an effect on people. That has an effect of kind of pushing yourself back in the closet a little bit sexually, unless you really address it. And I don't know. I just think as gay men, especially, we have to open ourselves up more to, yes, there is, you know, there's the ageism thing. There's the fact that a lot of people over a certain age do feel irrelevant sexually and are kind of like, well, if it hasn't happened yet, it's not going to happen. And I feel like what I've learned along my journey is there's something for everyone and it's never done. It's only done if you decide it is. You know,
I love that. There's something for everyone and it's never done unless you decide. Yeah.
Yeah.
As you said, a theme in this book is saying yes to your intuitions, your fantasies, your desires. So, you know, I think that's obviously resonant with a lot of people, but also people struggle. See this in my practice every day. I see this in my own life with like how to say yes. So how did you I mean, did you just like naturally say yes because that's just who you are?
Yeah. Back then, I never naturally just said yes. I would say I would finally get to yes with a lot of anxiety, a lot of self-judgment, a lot of hearing other people's voices telling me I should. For instance, posing nude for Tom Bianchi that first time. Oh no, what's it going to do to my TV career? Should I have a TV career? You know, I better not do it. What would my mom think? You know, so much of that. And then when I went to the actual interview for being an escort, which is kind of a funny chapter, I think.
It's hilarious. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the book is very funny. It sounds so serious, but it's really a funny book. But
yeah, well, I want to just like really drive that home though. This is it's a very entertaining. You read it and it's so relatable, but I mean, these are stories and they're short. Some of them are very short stories. Chapters are very short stories, but they are, I mean, it's truly entertaining. And that's the joy. It's a joyful book to read, even though you are, as you're saying, you're talking about really serious topics and struggles.
All my life, the main thing I've been is an entertainer. Mm. That's always been my thing. So if I was going to write a book, I knew that it had to be something that people wouldn't be like, oh, I didn't want it to just be like, hey, look what I did. But I was going to say with the interview to be an escort, you know, I saw it, the way I describe it in the book is I'd always kind of thought about wanting to do it. It was an insecurity thing. Could I be somebody who could get paid to have sex? And because I came from being very skinny and then I kind of worked out a lot and then built myself up. And then, you know, it's a different kind of low self-esteem when you kind of go like, are they going to like me? Will they like me enough to pay for me? You know, and I kind of toyed with it, you know, being a porn star kind of toyed with it in my head because it was something I was interested in. But it wasn't until I saw that ad for Maturity Escorts, because I was in my mid-30s at the time, mid-late 30s. And I thought, well, if you're ever going to do it, this is the place to do it. So I went to that interview and it was a trip, but I ended up doing it for a while. And I'm so glad that I did because of, not only the experience of it, you know, people think they know what it is, escorting. And sure, for some people, it is something that comes out of a negative thing. But for me, it was something I wanted to explore, and I did explore it. Like, nothing is lost on me with kind of emotional resonance, and the underlying kind of subtext of everything I do is I don't usually just do anything for the hell of it, you know? Mm. So
yeah, it's very thoughtful, and there's a purpose to it.
At the time, I didn't really know that it was having resonance. It was, you know, a few years later, after really looking at it and getting into a crappy relationship and how they affected each other, where I realized, oh my God, this is a story here. This is a story that has a moral to it, and it's not just something that I respond to. I think other people will too. So that's how it was all born.
Which is really, I want to encourage, as people read the book, to reflect on their own desires and thoughts about that and curiosities. I reference this book all the time on here. So I'm sure some listeners who are going to be like, oh God, here we go again. But Ray Rigoglioso's book, Gay Men and the New Way Forward, he talks about us having like 14 distinct gay male gifts, as he calls them. And sexual liberators and sexual leaders is one of those gifts. And of course, we are very identified as well with having so much shame around our sexuality, and we shame each other. We get shame from other people, shamed, as you said.
Right. But when you're little and you don't know exactly what shame is, but you're already feeling it from people, you know, like when my sisters would make fun of my body, like when I would show my chest, they'd kind of, and it wasn't like me, it wasn't meant to be mean or anything. It was just like, woo, woo, woo. Well, you take that in, you don't know what it is. Right. And as the years go on, you start to think like, well, I kind of like that boy, but I'm not supposed to because I heard that's really bad. So you take that in, or you watch a TV show and there's a character that's maybe a little fey, and somebody in your family, and this didn't happen in my family, but somebody in your family goes, oh, look at that. That's weird.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, that would happen, you know, in my
Paul,
family.
Paul Lynn, that's weird. What's his story? You know, and you take it in and you don't necessarily know the negativity of it. But it goes in sideways and it can't help but get into the DNA.
Yeah. And you don't have anyone to talk to about that.
Because you won't. You can't.
Right.
You can't. because it will tell too much about you. Yeah, exactly. And then you start going to, you know, a therapist or something. And like, I have the story of the therapist in there that like, I couldn't even tell the therapist that I was gay. Mm. And so it became this really negative experience. Mm. And it wasn't until college, coming out and everything. I mean, I didn't have a horrible childhood or anything. My parents were the best. My sisters are the best. But, you know, nobody's aware of that kind of stuff, especially in the growing up in the 60s. Right. Once you got to be a certain age, you went full out with your sexuality. But when you were a kid, no. Not in my town.
Well, sure, exactly. And, no, and, you know, I mean, your family, if there weren't any other gay or queer people, you know, it's like they're just kind of going along with the norms. You know,
well, there was a gay person in my family. My mother's uncle was gay, and he was just one of my favorite uncles. And I didn't find out until, I tell the story in the book, until I moved to New York City as an adult, that I found out that he was gay, because they never talked about it. He had a partner for like 40 years. They never talked about it.
Wow.
I never met the guy until I moved out to LA, actually.
Wow.
So,
and what a difference that could have made, you know, like to know that.
Could have made. And I get it. They hadn't dealt with it themselves, you know?
Sure.
At the time, it was like, you just don't talk about it.
Right. Well, that's how other people do see it. And so we have to, you know, excise that ourselves, you know, which is a part of what your journey has been. And so it sounds like, I want to circle back to the escort experience. And just because that was a big part of your overcoming the shame and transcending it and saying yes to that was I'm sure you still had residual shame and you had all that still there. But you know, what did you end up, you talked about there being kind of a moral to that story. Like what did you take away from that experience?
Well, up until that point, you know, once I had built myself up, I became what I call myself a body Nazi, because I didn't have sex with anybody who didn't have a great body or who wasn't really cute. You know, I just think back on that and I just want to like beat myself up, but I try not to, because when I became an escort, the guy that I interviewed with said, you seem like the kind of guy who like every dates movie star types, TV star types, whatever, which was true. And he said, you know, you're not going to get that on this job. You know, that's not, when you walk in the door, that's not what you're going to see. Can you have sex with someone who doesn't attract you that way? And I said, I honestly don't know. But I started on, because I'm somebody who, when I get asked to do a job, I try to do the best job that I possibly can. And also because I'm an actor, I'm very sensitive to what's going on in a person's head. And can you fake it till you make it if you have to, whatever. And what I found was that all of these guys had something about them that made the time go by beautifully. You know, they were either really sweet or really funny or really loving or really caring, or sometimes it was they had a, you know, 10-inch cock, and that was nice too. but the point being is that I learned to look beyond just what was put in front of me, you know, their face and the body, and look inside a little more. And that definitely changed me. Definitely changed me for the better, because I from that point on, I just started looking at men differently. And it was something I needed to go through, because I can't say that I look back on how I was and how exclusive I was about things with regret, because you shouldn't regret anything. Everything gets you to where you are now. Yes. You know, you can't take your history and pull out this and go, gee, I wish I hadn't done it. No, you did.
Right.
Own it.
Right.
But escorting to me changed my whole outlook on what it is to be a man. You know, I'm very much a caretaker. So I was able to use that. I thought, oh, well, if I'm an escort, all it is I'm just going to like walk in, stick my dick inside of him, pick up my $200 and leave. And it just wasn't that at all. Sometimes it was just chatting. Sometimes it was massaging. Sometimes it was, you know,
connection.
It was totally about connection. And I don't know how you could be an escort without having some kind of connection. I shouldn't say that was my experience. I established a connection with everybody that I worked with. And because of that, it was fun and it was exciting and it was, you know, sexy. And it was just, I don't know. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
I love hearing that, because we don't hear that narrative
Yeah.
Very often. I mean, I think we're becoming a more sex work positive culture.
And there are guys, I mean, I read blogs and stuff like that, who totally, they treat it kind of like I did. They're like, every person that they, there's not like a disdain there. They really are like, I'm there for that guy. I want to give him a really great time. He was going through a hard time, so we kind of shifted gears and we chatted instead of, that's the human thing to do. And I'm sorry if people look down at it and go, well, but they're paying you. Well, you know what? Sometimes what you get when you pay for something is better than what you have in your real life, where you sit and yell at each other all the time and you call that a relationship. So,
well, you know? Right, exactly. I mean, you could say the same thing about, I mean, being a therapist, a psychotherapist or a coach. I mean, right. I talk with clients about that all the time. Like, would you still care about me if I wasn't paying you, you know, if we didn't have a business transaction? And it's like, well, that's just grist for the mill. You know, we pay for all sorts of things, but when it comes to sex, for whatever reason, there's all this stigma around that.
What it comes down to, and it's the most simplistic way to put it, is what you do, what I do as an actor, what I did as an escort, we are there to make people feel better. Simple as that. You come to the theater, hopefully you leave feeling better. Hopefully you leave feeling entertained, or you've thought about it. Come to you for a session, same thing. Come to me when I was an escort. If you didn't leave happier when I was finished, then I just didn't do my job well. You know, I mean, just feel like there's
a great way to think about it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I did think about it.
Yeah, and that's such a missing piece for so many of us, you know, so many, because we grow up with this legacy of exclusion and isolation
and shame,
emotionally, mentally, right? Shame for sure. And certainly with our bodies, you know what I mean? My gosh, we, you know, you talk about being a former body Nazi, and there's a story in the book about a man that you, I think it's relatable, but there was a man that you dated, and you share a story about meeting him and dating him a little bit for a short time. But that was an important experience of you in your relationship to your attractions physically and how you were looking at men. Can you share a little bit about what happened in relation to all that?
Well, let me just preface this by saying that every chapter is the title of a Broadway musical. Mm. And there's some fun, clever stuff in that. This chapter is called Should Have Been You. Mm. Because when I met him, having been the body Nazi, but having kind of been challenged by my best girlfriend to look for love, look for, go beyond the bodies. This was before I was escorting. And I saw this guy at a bar in New York, and he was so cute, like these big glasses and big bright smile. And so I was like, okay, I could tell that he wasn't like the big bodybuilder guy, and he wasn't like the GQ model type, but he was just so cute and so, you know, affable, it seemed like. So he was going to be my guinea pig to see about. So I went over to him and we started chatting, and we just talked. We had so much in common. He was so funny and so smart, and smart goes a long way with me, you know? Mm. And we started telling truth, only truth. We were like, we're only going to tell the truth here, right? So we did this whole thing, and we asked questions, and we went back to his place, and we drank scotch and smoked cigarettes. It was like the best night in the world. And he finally, you know, we kissed and went off to bed. And when he came out of the bathroom after having, you know, just put a towel on, his body was not what I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. It was kind of paunchy and very hairy. And all of a sudden, like, I seized up. And we went ahead and we started rolling around. We started doing stuff, but I became so disconnected because he was not what I thought he was. Mm. And then he outright asked me, does my body disappoint you? And I lied to him and I said, no, of course not. And then I realized we had set up this truth-telling thing all night long. So finally, after like another bit of rolling around, I said, you know what? I have to come clean here. I have to say your body did disappoint me. Holy shit. What a crappy thing to say when you're naked and vulnerable and enjoying each other. And that was just pretty much the death knell of that relationship. And like I said, I threw away this wonderful, sweet, smart, cute guy because I was such a fucking asshole. And yet I even say to him, it's like, I kind of don't, I hate that I'm like this, but I wouldn't be able to help it if I'm dating you and some guy comes over with the body in the face and I get all, I mean, it was just awful. And that was a turning point for me where I realized what an asshole I was and that I knew that even if I couldn't do it yet, that this is something I need to work on. And then the escorting came about.
And which is that fascinating.
Forced me into position. Yeah, it is. Sometimes you get what you need at certain times in your life. And I think that's why it all happened.
That is so, thank you for sharing that. And it is like, when I read that chapter, when Gus asks that question, does my body disappoint me? It was just like, oh God, that's, I mean, I've had certainly that thought, and I know other guys listening have had that thought, or girls, women listening. You know, but what's so interesting is that you said, can I expand who I'm attracted to, how I relate to this? And so
can I fake it till I make it type thing?
Yeah, right.
But there's
you did open up and you got some information, you got scared.
Yep.
And it was, I think even.
And it was when I realized that I could not go on the way I had been going on.
Yes.
If I was going to really get a connection with somebody. But a funny, kind of a funny epilogue to this. So this story is also in my one-man show. Mm. And when I was trying to get my one-man show produced in New York, my second one-man show, I gave it to a producer that I was friendly with. I had done a show that he was connected with, a really great guy. And I sent him the script to read. I think this was before I had even done the show. I think it was just the script. Yeah. So he read the script. He got back to me. He goes, David, he goes, there's a lot of really good stuff. And he said, but I got to the Gus story. He said, and suddenly I hated you.
Mm.
He said, I didn't want to follow you anymore. I didn't want to. And I said, okay, I get that. But do you understand that I'm very self-effacing about that, very self-aware about what a shithead I was? And do you understand that that's me at my lowest? Mm-hmm. And so the gamut that I needed to go was not from A to C. Where I needed to run, where I needed to end up at the end of this show is,
yes,
I had to be that low so that I could find out how to get high. And he said, yeah, I'm sorry, David, I just can't. And so when I was writing the story for the book, there was a lot that I had to fill in there because I wanted people, it's okay if they hate me in the moment, but hopefully they've read enough to know that this is not going to stay here like this, that this guy needs, just like a lot of us, this guy needs some attention on a flaw in his character.
You know? Yeah. I mean, you even say that about at the end of the chapter. I mean, you say that this was, you recognized, because you say, I went on, that relationship ended, you know, that kind of short dating relationship ended.
Mm-hmm.
And I continued on my, I think you called it something about lust. You're like kind of
my book of lust. Yeah.
You're right. And, but that you realize that if I wanted more intimacy, that wasn't going to like happen this way.
And I didn't want intimacy for a long, long time.
Hmm.
But sometimes you get slapped in the face and you go, oh my God, that's what I'm missing.
Yeah.
And I really want it. And I just didn't want to go through my whole life without connection. And then that's when that other relationship that I talk about, that was kind of my big relationship in life, happened and put me through the shit show that I kind of needed to go through so that I could have some self-esteem about who I am by myself and in a relationship.
Just so important. I think, and so inspiring, because first of all, men are not socialized to lean into relationship. Right. We're not taught how to really be in relationship. We don't know what to do with our feelings. We're certainly not taught about emotional intimacy. We're taught about sexual conquest and like sports sex, but not relationship sex. And so for us as gay men, like learning how to be in relationships and be intimate is going to require some shit show relationship. You know what I mean? Maybe you're one of those rare people who just falls into it and you're like naturally good at it. That has not been.
No, I'm terrible at it. Yeah. I'm terrible at it. I mean, but at least I know that. Like, I'm not somebody who eats people up and spits them out. I'm still on the journey. I have not found that person and I would love it to happen. I'm still on that journey. So the end of the book isn't like, oh, happy ending.
Right.
You know, the happy ending is that I kind of know who I am and I know what I want and I continue that life is a journey.
It's such an important message for us. I never relate personally to this idea of like, oh, I figured it all out and then here's how to do it, which is like, that's especially rubs me the wrong way when gamers.
Oh my
that.
God. we made sure that this was not that because I still have my struggles. I can't say that I've learned a shit ton that I'm happy to pass on. Or if I'm in a situation where I'm talking to somebody who's really down, chances are there's something that I've had in my experience that I could tell them that might give them a little hope. But I certainly wouldn't say, well, here's what you need to do. I would never do that because I hate when people do that to me.
Well, right. Exactly. That's not helpful. That's such a turnoff. And yeah, and that is what's so beautiful about this book and beautiful about, I think, when I think about, I talk about this on the podcast a lot too, like we as gay men, one of our strengths is as hard on ourselves as we can be and as kind of self-hating and self-attacking and self-shaming as we can be, we are also models of, as you say, being self-aware and self-effacing and knowing how to be vulnerable and show that we're not trying to be, if we can sort of do the work to realize like we're light and shadow, we're all of it, you know, that we have a beautiful, powerful capacity to say like, yeah, it's a vulnerable journey. Like, few people know that, you know, more than we do because we really,
that's true,
we're this
but
rare
also the
breed.
The strength that comes, that you need to be vulnerable. We have that. We, even though we don't always feel that way, but there is a strength in being your authentic self. Mm. And the more kind of out of the closet you are and the more kind of like true to yourself you are, there is such a strength in doing that because we're raised to say that's not right. You know, there's a whole religious right, and the fundamentalists and the evangelicals are like, we love the gays, but we just don't love the behavior. You know, love the sinner, hate the sin. Ooh. And to me, that gets about the biggest fuck you that I could possibly throw, because it ain't a sin. And they're the ones who are sinners for being so fucking judgmental.
Yes.
And there's anger in this book too, but I'm just voicing what I know a ton of people feel about this faction of society. This faction of society that just thinks they're so above everybody else because of what they believe. And I put it in the book. I talk about how they're actually just really selfish because they feel like if they sin, they're not going to get into the kingdom of heaven. And so not only do they look at it in their lives, but they feel like they're going to change all of us because God would love that and they'll get into the kingdom of heaven. It's like, what, because you're fucked up about it? You have to make my life miserable? Because you're so selfish? Because you're not going to get into the kingdom of heaven? Well, fuck you. I mean, I don't have enough fuck yous for the evangelical fundamentalist faction that is so anti-gay. Yeah. I just don't have enough, you know.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, amen to that. Yeah, it's it's powerful because that's where we should be.
A bunch of hypocrites and just a bunch of hypocrites too. Because I think in the book I talk about how, you know, I did my research and the Bible Belt watches more porn than anybody else.
Oh,
so like,
for sure.
Ooh,
right. There's so much pressure. And we get targeted because we
are expressing ourselves. We're such an easy target sometimes. But I'm just, part of the book is just like, be aware of this and let your freak flag fly. And if somebody doesn't like it, fuck them.
Mm. Yeah, that is really, I just love that. I love that you're so vocal about that, because that's something, you know, that we are, our work, certainly as queer people, gay men, is to overcome that if we decide we want to. And as you said earlier, it's about ownership, like owning our power as our authentic selves, owning the fact that there are going to be people who don't like us. They're going to be people who hate us, and really understanding that underneath that, for sure, is probably rampant envy and jealousy of anything maybe we're doing other than just like
that we
being
can
free.
that we do it, yeah,
right, exactly. Of being liberated, and that's our, so we have to be cautious to not imprison each other through kind of our intra-minority stress. So I want to talk about that a little bit more in kind of these other, you know, one of the things related to you expressing yourself and being all out, I'll just say, and owning your power as a 62-year-old man. And we know aging in the world, period, is
true.
This is not specific to our community, but, you know, certainly aging in our community has been fraught with all sorts of negative messages, and certainly coming out of the generation of HIV and AIDS, you know, like the idea of aging as a gay man was for many men.
Wasn't going to happen anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So it's somewhat of a novel experience.
Yeah, we weren't prepared to survive.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And of course there were older gay men before AIDS, but they had no option to be out. So this is the first generation really of men entering into a different time in life and having the option to really own power and to teach the rest of us. So like,
if they'll listen.
If they'll
Yeah. I mean, look, I get it. When I was a kid, you know, I didn't necessarily want people telling me what to do when it came to sex or anything like that. But I can tell people certain things, having experienced what I did, not only as an escort, but also as an erotic blogger. And what it comes down to is, like I said, you're never done. There's always going to be some, like there's so many, when I used to have my photos on Tumblr, they would get reposted onto other blogs, other Tumblr blogs with photos of other older guys. Mm-hmm. And they would get like hundreds of likes. Like I said, there's something for everyone. If you are of a certain age and you feel like, well, I'll never meet anybody, then you need to look elsewhere. Maybe go a little younger, maybe go a little, you know, just something you've not tried before. Because I do, even though like I'm single, I'm looking for somebody, but it's sometimes it's just you're not looking hard enough if you really want it. Ooh, or even if it's just like companionship. That. Yeah, but even if it's just companionship you're looking for, do something you thought you would never do. Because as we get older, we do get more set in our ways.
Yes.
And so we tend to like slough off opportunities that might be really good for us, you know?
Yes. Yeah, that's such a great point.
But then there are the guys who are out there all the time and always social and do this. And that's great. I mean, I'm not that kind of guy. I'm just not that social. Mm-hmm. But whatever, I just feel like it's like opening yourself up to more possibilities without saying it's never going to happen. Like those are the four. It's never going to happen are the four worst words you could say.
Yeah. I mean, that's just resigning. That's just foreclosing on hope or possibility.
Like if you go, look, it's never going to happen and I don't care. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But if it's never going to happen, but I wish it would, ooh, then you got to stay in the game, kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Stay in the game. Right. And look, you know, I run a coaching group for gay men over 40. And we talked about this past week, like, who are your role models? And what and specifically, like, who are your gay male role models who are over 40? And most everyone was like, I don't know. I can't identify.
Really?
Yeah. And so the conversation ended up going into kind of what you had said, like, look a little harder. Like, I don't think that we're just not thinking about seeing each other in the ways that would indicate that there's more there than meets the eye.
Yeah.
You know, we have so many blocks and resistances and filters. And so I like what you said about look a little harder and open your mind.
As I say in the book, okay, maybe you don't want to become an escort. Maybe you don't want to put your dick on the internet, whatever. But I even like the slightest little thing, it's like I've always kind of wanted to pose nude, but I couldn't do it because what if somebody gets the photos or what if? And I'm here to say, do it. Get your phone out. Take some pictures. Delete them if you need to. But the actual act of doing it is so freeing. Mm-hmm. And that's just one little element I'm talking about of go try not to like settle in too much. Don't get too comfortable. Do things you're afraid of, in which I give that piece of advice, but I'm not the best at it. But I have done lots of things in my life. Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of things in my life that I was afraid of doing. And there were 100 zillion other things that I hopefully will do. But we settle in so much at our certain age. And you know, for people who are ageist, who look at us and go, ugh. God, because I have my share of people on my OnlyFans page and when I had my Tumblr page who just are so grateful that I'm doing what I'm doing, that I'm being so blatant sexually at my age with my minimum notoriety that I have as an actor, that people are really seem to be really appreciative and kind of inspired by the fact that I'm doing this. But then there are the other ones, the haters who are like, ugh, put it back on, or, you know, get some dignity, and this is going to, you're a has-been and it never was, and this, that, and just horrible, horrible things. And I don't care anymore. I don't give a shit. I am expressing myself the way I want to, and I do it the way I've done everything with thought and creativity. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it does inspire people. And if all it is here he is naked with his dick again, well, okay, well, hopefully you enjoy it. And if not, move on.
Well, right, exactly. And move on. You're right. Yeah, you don't need to be on this page and like
exactly.
spewing exactly. or showing all your self-shame, putting it on display in the form of an attack on me. Well,
but that's what they do. That's what people do these days.
Right. Well, and it's Brene Brown talks about like being in the arena, mm-hmm. and it's like the people in the stands like can't comment. It's like totally. Get in the arena, get in your own arena
and see what it feels like. But right. I wouldn't take it back for a second. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad I'm in the arena that I'm in, because I've had this kind of exhibitionism, sexual provocation thing. I've had it in me my whole life, but I didn't act on it.
Mm. Yeah, you kind of repressed that for a while.
Well, I repressed it. It was something I always wanted to do, but I didn't have the guts to do it. I was too career driven. I thought about my family. And then when I started to put stuff out, because I was really getting, I'd been posing for years for photos with various photographers, but they weren't really going anywhere because there was really nowhere to put them except a coffee table book or an exhibit. Mm. And finally, it was around 2008 where I was like, the conservatives are really stepping in. They're really speaking up and they're really making their ways into the government. And I'm hearing more like anti-gay stuff than I've ever heard in my entire life. And because we're getting it through social media finally. Yeah. So that was kind of the kickoff point for me where I was going to go like, you want gay? You want gay? I'm going to give you fucking gay. I'm going to stick my dick in your face. I'm going to double down, and I'm going to be as creative and artistic and sexy as I possibly have in me. Mm. And you may like it or not, but it's how I've chosen to express this anti-conservative, shameless thing. Because I'm tired of it. I am just so fucking sick of hearing other people's shame, of hearing the fact that people feel like being gay is going to ruin their lives or ruining their career. That still happens, you know?
Oh, sure, yeah.
That they can't come out and they can't, and, you know, my dick is on the internet. It's all over. Mm. Why? Right. Why? Why is any of this a big fucking deal anymore? It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was just reading about
this. Everybody's dicks are on the internet.
Well, I mean, no, but I was just reading about some celebrity who I guess is like, it was one of those blind items being blackmailed because there's a picture that then it could take him down. Like, really? A naked picture of a guy with an erection, even if he's, you know, having sex with somebody or whatever, it's going to take him down. Why should that be?
Right.
You know, ugh, get over yourself.
Yes.
I feel like I'm being like really kind of abrasive about all this right now, but it's just sometimes when I, beyond writing it and I speak about it, mm-hmm. the amount of indignation that I have about it all is just, it's been spewing inside of me for 62 years. So, yeah, Dodson, well, you're getting an earful.
Well, and I love it. I love it. And it speaks to me and to listeners that you're passionate about this and why it's so important, and that it's the anger about being repressed and having this like bullshit put on us, you know, and saying like, no, thank you. Here's your pox infested blanket back. I don't want it. And then to channel that as well into, you said, creative and artistic and sexy into your various artistic mediums. So whether it's your erotic blog or your book or your, you know, one man show.
That's my way of doing it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for people like for gay porn stars specifically who are sex workers that way, or guys who are escorting and stuff, I'm always for like, do mm-hmm. it your way. Because I actually think the gay porn stars are pretty brave because mm-hmm. they're putting it out there. And, you know, what people think about porn, you know, porn in general is negative. well, not people, I'm going to say the shitheads think it's negative. Mm. But on top of that being gay, on top of the fact that it's men having sex with men, that is that extra layer of something that people will point at and go, sinner, you know.
Right.
But to be able to put that out there joyfully and when people, you know, love watching it. So bravo, big fat bravo and kudos. That's not how I do it. Like, I'm not somebody who like does a lot of scenes with other guys and stuff. I mean, I have some on OnlyFans, but however it's done, I don't give a shit. As long as you're doing it with your heart and soul.
That's the key, your heart and soul. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what's so beautiful about all the stories in your book, and your heart and soul definitely comes through in Damn Shame, that you're in charge of it. And I was certainly, I think you can, sex work can be, there's plenty of victimization in sex work and there's plenty of trauma in there and all through, you know, the adult industry and all that stuff. And though we have, and I think OnlyFans really is kind of speaks to this. That's your channel for expressing that, doing it with heart and soul and doing it on my terms. You know, so yeah, thinking about like porn actors, gay porn actors, especially as trailblazers and liberators and being empowered, if they're doing it with their heart and soul and they're being,
right,
you know.
I know there's, like you said, there's, I'm sure there's a lot of negative stuff and sometimes people go into it for the wrong reasons, whatever. But I don't know. I just feel like I can only speak from my personal experience. And as an escort and as an erotic provocateur or whatever, I'll call it porn, you know, I'll call it porn, but it's my kind of porn. It's only been a good experience. Mm. I've only had a good experience. Now, that's not to say that shitty things haven't happened. I talk about losing, you know, a couple of agents because of some photos that they found. I talk about losing a family member, you know, because of the photos. But do you understand that's not my problem? That's the problem. And,
exactly.
And I can't just kind of go like, oh, well, you're right. I can't, because I just don't feel that, you know,
that's not being true.
I don't think
you.
It should be. I don't think it should be a big deal. I don't care who you are, you know?
Right.
But not everybody's there yet.
Exactly. And that doesn't mean that that means actually even more that it's important for you to,
well, that's why the forward. Dialogue, the conversation that I hope this book starts with the big question, why? Mm. Why is it such a big deal? Why are you so filled with shame? Why don't you do blah, 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 blah? Right. Why are you judging me, blah, 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 when you have this in your life? You know,
yes.
It's a lot of why that I want people to take from this book and ask those questions of themselves and of the people that they love and the people that they don't love, like the fundamentalists. Why?
Yeah.
What's your fucking problem? That's the other question.
What's your fucking problem? What's your fucking problem? I love that. Yeah. Yeah. Which is, and we can ask all of that. And we're change instigators. And we're, and that's
totally
what you are doing in this book. But
I hope so. I mean, I you never know what the effect is going to be or who's going to read it, but I really hope so. I hope that people, I've gotten enough feedback from people who have followed me so far and said that what's been, it's helped and it's made them feel better about themselves. So now we can maybe take it a little further and go to people who don't necessarily know who I am, but read it and see how it affects
them. They're going
to
know now.
Well, yes, they will.
Yeah. Well, and they're going to receive it in the way that they need to. And again, I think what I have found about it is that it has this really important message, but it's delivered in what I would say is a gay sensibility, you know, which has humor and has entertainment and has joy and gaiety, which is, that's one of our gifts in our community. So the fact that you're able to do that, and of course you're bringing all of your being an actor and a creator into that, it's really a wonderful book, and it's a book of stories and vulnerability and power. And challenge. I love that you're wanting to challenge everybody, including us, because we need to be challenged around our, but challenged in a good way, not challenged in a self-attacking way. But
within our community, you know, especially the ageism thing, it can be really daunting. And what's nice, and what I found when I started putting my photos out there in this whole, there's something for everyone, I didn't realize how many younger guys liked older guys. Mm. I had no idea. So somebody said to me, well, what, do you want a 20-year-old boyfriend? I'm like, Well, I can't say I'm out for a 20-year-old boyfriend, but if I meet somebody younger than me, much younger than me, and we get along great and everything is, the age is not an issue, then why not? I mean, but I didn't realize that because I think a lot of guys are like, well, no, I'm 60 now and nobody's going to want me. And I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
And I just don't, it hurts my heart because I feel like there's something for everyone.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the, well, and that's a beautiful place for us to stop here, but there's something for everyone. And so many wonderful nuggets today in this conversation about like being authentic and courageous and bold and funny and angry and all of it. It's really beautiful. So, David, thank you. And so again, the book is Damn Shame, a memoir of desire, defiance, and show tunes.
And there will be an audio book as well, which I just finished recording. And
okay. So you recorded it yourself, which is,
I did. They gave me that opportunity. It was really fun. Really
I love that. You telling your own stories, that'll be really cool. And then you're all over the place. So where can people find you?
I am all over the place. Well, my OnlyFans page is onlyfans.com/realguyLA. Real Guy LA. That's the name that I was using when I was kind of deciding to separate my kind of like my porn-ish with the actor guy. So I kept it at that. But everybody knows. I mean, you can look up, you could Google David Pevsner OnlyFans and that page will come up. Gotcha. But I'm also on Twitter, both as Real Guy LA and as David Pevsner.
Okay.
One is more political, one is more provocative. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, DPEVS, DPEVS. And it's a lot, you know, I'm an old guy doing social media, so that doesn't always turn out great, but it's, it's nice to be able to, you know, reach out and have people reach out to me, which I always love. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, and we will put all of that in the show notes.
You'll get an eyeful.
I'll get an eyeful. David, thank you for this conversation. Thank you for this book. It's really...
I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I really am.
I get to reread it too, just because it's fun and it's inspiring to me. So I wish you all the best, and we will, you know, continue to support your work, and maybe you can
I really appreciate that.
Talk to us sometime.
Thank you for that.
Thanks, David.
Thanks for tuning in to Gay Men's Life Lab. If you liked what you heard, I'd love for you to head over to iTunes and subscribe. While you're there, please consider giving the show a quick rating and maybe share an episode with your friends, loved ones, and colleagues. And if you want more information, visit buckdotson.com, find me on Instagram and Facebook at @buckdotsoncoaching, and on my YouTube channel, Buck Dotson Coaching and Counseling. And remember that personal growth and creating the life, relationships, and work you want as a gay man is a process, so take one step at a time, rest when you need it, show yourself compassion, and ask for help along the way. Thanks, and I'll see you next time.